are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Thursday, October 25th, 2018. My name is Michael Brooks, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Nick Guthman. He is a director at Our Future, Our Progressive, Our Blue Future, which is a youth-oriented political action organization dedicated to helping the Democrats take back control of the House through the youth vote. We're talking about what they're doing and how they're mobilizing. Bombs have been sent to Joe Biden, Robert De Niro, Maxine Waters, in addition to the Clintons, Barack Obama, CNN, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, as Donald Trump blames the media. Federal judge blocks Georgia from throwing out absentee ballots based on a voter on signature mismatches in one small reversal of Brian Kemp's apartheid-style war on voting rights in Georgia as he attempts to save himself from the Stacey Abrams surge. Trump denies that he is talking on his iPhone, unsecured iPhone, and that the Chinese are listening to his every conversation. What new information would you learn? Maybe slightly more overt admitting of crimes or something? The more interesting question for me is how you would translate, it was a tough deal and they were unfair and it was a bad deal, get Carl Icahn on the phone, into Mandarin. Saudi Arabia acknowledges that the killing of Jamal Khashoggi was premeditated, but is still denying any involvement from senior leadership, as the Crown Prince says it was a horrible thing that has touched every human on earth and must be addressed. Family separations at the border started last year before everybody found out, apparently. Donald Trump attacks freeloaders on drug prices, and 15 million people will lose pre-existing condition coverage or see a premium increase if a Republican lawsuit, which the Trump administration is not fighting against, goes through, even as Republicans from Donald Trump to Scott Walker are lying fluently, blatantly, and daily on pre-existing conditions as we head into the midterms. The world's most prominent political prisoner, Lula da Silva, has released a note to the Brazilian people saying that Democrats, those who believe in democracy, from all political persuasions must unite to avert a fascist adventure as Brazil heads to the polls on Sunday in light of a massive slush fund scandal where corporations were buying information from WhatsApp users to spread fake news and propaganda on behalf of the Bolsonaro campaign. And Workers' Party candidate Fernando Haddad calls Bolsonaro a fascist barbarian. Bernie Sanders took to the op-ed pages of the New York Times demanding an end for the U.S. support of the Saudi-UAE brutal war on Yemen, which the United States and UK participates with and supports every day. And Andrew Gillum shows how it's done. All that and much, much more on today's Majority Report, Boys Club Edition, with myself, Matt Leck, Brendan Finn. Jamie is taking her one day off today. Samantha is out and about. I was thinking of right-wing Mandela, like, who I think right-wing Mandela, who many of you may not know that character, but it goes back to Rick Santorum comparing the struggle against Obamacare to the struggle against apartheid when Mandela died. And then I decided Mandela would just become a right-wing pundit. I think the next iteration for Mandela, the next place for that character to go, is he becomes Joe Rogan. Right? I think, like, you can do that on DMT.
And that's the same. You saw a double helix when you were tripping.
The other person who
fuck.
Would fill, the other person who would fill that lane would probably be Libertarian Gandhi, but he hasn't been in rotation. As
Libertarian
much
Gandhi either. Hasn't been in rotation as much, and I feel like Libertarian Gandhi would be the one, like the guest, like the awful guest. He's like what we discovered when we let children work in the factory was that everybody had more money, and the left won't tell you that. And I mean, like, with you, like, that's super fucking complicated because on one hand you would say, you don't want kids like working, making my shirt. Like, that's fucked up. But you're saying everyone makes more money. Wow. Sometimes things are just like complicated.
I got to think about GDP.
Anyways, did you see this clip of this rhinoceros pissing on a boa?
Yeah, but I wanted to, I was thinking of Right Wing Mandela because I wanted to do like a bunch of like bothering Sam with the bra ad read. It's like, really? What was the last time you snapped a bra, Samantha? Andrew Gillum is leading in the polls against odd racist Ron DeSantis. There's actually something in this clip here. I don't want to bring up this whole class race debate. I actually find a lot of it really very useless. And as I said, I think the synthesis that we need to have is actually operationally pretty clear. And I would recommend that everybody read and listen to interviews that I've done with Bill Fletcher Jr., who I will be talking to again soon. I think he is actually probably the – he has the best view of this sort of overall in terms of integrating perspectives. But – this is a good example of how, of course, in a context like this race, where there are robocalls being run that are, you know, overt racist appeals, where Ron DeSantis has a, in addition to obviously his support of Donald Trump, has his own extensive background with racist and xenophobic groups. Andrew Gillum would make history as the first black governor of Florida. And there's also a huge amount of civil rights issues, including, of course, voting rights, which hang in the balance in this election. And there's also just a principle of politics here that go on the offense, make yourself look good and your opponent look bad. And in this exchange, in addition to the rightness and the beauty of how well Gillum owned DeSantis here, think to yourself outside of that core of Republican voters who are white identity politics driven, what normal person, including people who they might not be as woke as you, whatever, this is where I get annoyed with the identity side. They might not be on board with everything. They might not use the right terms, whatever. But they're not, they are very, you can appeal to them on justice and rightness. And also just who's a more appealing human being. What normal person outside of that white identity politics base is going to watch this exchange and not come away backing Andrew Gillum? Let's watch this from last night. It was incredibly impressive.
On live TV in August, on the first day of the general election campaign, you said of Andrew Gillum's run for governor, quote, "The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by embracing a socialist agenda." Fox News quickly disavowed your words, saying, quote, "They do not condone the language." Now, you called some of this response absurd. You've made appearances at four of David Horowitz's Freedom Center events. Again, four separate times, four speeches, among some of Mr. Horowitz's statements, quoting here, "This country's only serious race war is against whites." You know, and I'll ask the questions. Okay. It's not a McCarthy game, and I'm giving it, yeah. Wait for the question,
okay.
Sir.
Okay.
He also said, "If blacks are oppressed in America, why isn't there a black exodus?" Now, in 2015, in your speech before the Freedom Center, you said of Mr. Horowitz, "David has done such a great work, and I've been an admirer. I've been to these conferences in the past, and I've been a big admirer of an organization that shoots straight, tells the American people the truth, and is standing up for the right thing." Those are his words. Here's my question.
He had not even made those statements then.
Yes, he had, sir. The first statement was made many years ago.
I mean, how the hell am I supposed to know every single statement somebody makes? Look at the way
Gillum looks at him when he squeaks like that.
Yes. And this, by the way, this is all Jordan Peterson dominance hierarchy stuff, and he's right about some of this. So look at the body language. Look at who looks better on TV. Look who's whiny and defensive. Look who's calm, collected, and clear.
And made those statements then?
Yes, he had, sir. The first statement was made many years ago.
I mean, how the hell am I supposed to know every single statement somebody makes? Here's the deal. Let me just say this straight up. I've lived my life, whether it's athletics, whether it's military, whether it's serving as a prosecutor. You know, when I was downrange.
Yeah, serving as a Florida prosecutor would be a great indicator for the sensitivity to racial justice issues.
Also,
I bet.
Going to the Kavanaugh, like, I played varsity sports with blacks.
Yeah, right. Actually, if you read Christian Piccolini's book we have on the show, he talks about one of the first disconnects he had between being a skinhead in high school was playing football with black players. And he was able to put aside his literal skinhead membership to win some games.
In Iraq, we worked together as a team regardless of race. We had the American flag on our arm. We wore the same uniform and we fought for the country. When I was a prosecutor, I stood up for victims of every race, color, and creed. That's the only way to do it in our country. It's something I believe in, and as governor, I will represent all the people. Everyone will get a fair shake. But I am not going to bow down to the altar of political correctness. I'm going to not let the media smear me like they like to do with so many other people.
Sir,
I'm certainly not going to take anything from Andrew Gillum, who's endorsed the Dream Defenders, which says Israel is an apartheid state and which says the police and prisons have no place in justice.
Mr. Gillum, wait for the applause and go. And Mr. DeSantis, I'll point out, I wish you would have waited for the question, because I had a question and it's not what you think it is. Mr. Gillum, I'll give you a chance to respond now.
Well, let me first say, my grandmother used to say a hit dog will holler. And it hollered through this room. Mr. DeSantis has spoken. First of all, he's got neo-Nazis helping him out in the state. He has spoken at racist conferences. He's accepted a contribution and would not return it from someone who referred to the former president of the United States as a Muslim, N-I-G-G-E-R. When asked to return that money, he said no. He's using that money to now fund negative ads. Now, I'm not calling Mr. DeSantis a racist. I'm simply saying the racists believe he's a racist.
But Mr. DeSantis.
Boom.
If I would ask the audience to please let Mr. DeSantis now respond.
The conference I attended was keynoted by a Medal of Honor recipient.
And of course, it's perfect because he goes actually to the most pathetic form of identity politics there. There's one person playing identity politics, the way people use the term pejoratively in that clip, and that's him. The pejorative critique of identity politics is that everything else is subordinate purely to your identity. Your positions don't matter. Your arguments don't matter. Your identity is the only thing that matters. And to the extent that that's ever true, that, of course, is either an incomplete picture or just wrong. And the only person that's doing that is him. I was played sports. I was in the military. I prosecuted. There was a vet there. Andrew Gillum is appealing to a broad set of people who, even if they aren't, they might like to think that they might want to actually get to a place that's ethical and correct with regard to opposing racism. And that's going to be certainly anybody who's susceptible to voting for a Democrat in that race is going to have that perspective. So he framed it as, you know, you're the one who's out of the mainstream. Normal people don't run around with neo-Nazis. Normal people don't go to freakish far-right divisive conferences. It's the same way that the residents of Charlottesville came out and they confronted that little scumbag Jason Kessler. Like, don't come with your terrorism, your racism, your toxicity and ruin our town. That is how it needs to be framed. And that was perfectly done. And absolutely right. And also, it took it out of the morality game, which these guys love to do. Okay, I don't know what is in Ron DeSantis' heart. I don't know what the particulars of his, you know, how he self-justifies his support for Donald Trump, his associations with disgusting people, his advocacy of bigoted xenophobic policies. I don't care. The racists think you're a racist. Boom. That's it. And no person who has any pretension of leadership to a position like the governor of the state of Florida and the country that we have to create, not the country that it is now and certainly not the country that it's been historically, should that ever be acceptable. Andrew Gillum nailed that, and that's how you do it. It's perfect. We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to come back with Nick Guthman and talk about how young progressives are laying the foundation to take back the House. Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Nick Guthman. He is the co-founder and executive director of Our Blue Future. Nick, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
So, Nick, what is behind Our Blue Future? Talk about the stakes for young people in politics, and how did you guys come up with this idea?
Sure. So, Blue Future was started about a year ago, a little over a year ago, by me and some friends from school. We all went to American University and were heavily involved in the College Democrats there at AU. And realizing, you know, that 2018 was upon us, we wanted to see what young people could do and what we could do to support young people who wanted to get involved in political campaigns, knowing that there would be so much energy, so much excitement, and so much at stake. Because basically, as you know, every issue is on the line, and you know, our democracy is on the line. And so we knew young people were going to step up, and at the same time, we felt that young people weren't being supported and weren't having, you know, didn't have the resources to really effectively mobilize and organize their campuses for political campaigns. So we got together and we started to think about this problem and our own experiences doing political work on college campuses. And we said, well, why don't we try to start an organization that can really engage and equip young people with the resources, the tools, the network they need to be effective organizers directly for some of the most competitive congressional campaigns.
Yeah, and you make the point, and maybe you could talk a little bit more, because I'm assuming, you know, when you look at the polling and you talk to young people, whether it's issues that are very direct, like the student loan crisis and the abuse of students through the student loan industry and the federal government with regards to the loans, also the broader questions of structural inequality and diminished earning opportunities and the other issues that result from extreme wealth concentration and oligarchy, and also younger people's views on whether it be marriage equality, transgender rights, and things like that, that there is a fair amount of pretty left, pretty, you know, at very least center-left views with young people, and also that younger people are, this is a very, very diverse generation. And then on the flip side, obviously you have the traditional, you know, oligarch, influential Republican donors like Sheldon Adelson dumping huge amounts of money into far-right youth organizations. Or as an example, you know, Sam Cedar, of course, of this show, debated Charlie Kirk the other day, and Turning Points USA doesn't focus electorally, but they do focus heavily, obviously, on, you know, propagandizing for extreme right-wing views on college campuses. So was that sort of like where the genesis was? Was on one hand, You're doing this great work. You know that there's all this sort of energy for, as an example, taking back the House, which we'll get to in a second. But then all this money is being dumped in from the far right to skew the influence when it comes down to young people.
Yeah, you've got it. You hit it right on the nail there. I mean, you know, to start, we believe that young people are with us. We believe young people can play a critical role in helping to elect progressive candidates, Democratic candidates, who will stand up for the values of our generation. Overwhelmingly, young people want to see bold action on climate change, on student debt, on gun violence prevention, criminal justice reform, voting rights, and the, you know, our democracy, and more, women's health care for all. And so young people are with us on these issues. And at the same time, the party and the sort of institutional infrastructure of the progressive movement does not do a terrific job of funding and supporting young people who want to dedicate their lives to the progressive cause and to, you know, improving the lives of folks in their communities. And we think that electoral politics is just one tool in our toolbox to be able to affect that change. And, you know, we looked into the research, seeing how much money the college Republicans get, seeing how much money Turning Point USA has from these donors. There really isn't anything of the sort on the left. And so we said, well, we should try to fix that problem. We should see what is possible. And we've had, you know, a good amount of success here in our first year, raising almost $100,000, supporting over 25 students across 19 different congressional districts who are, you know, mobilizing hundreds of thousands of volunteers, registering even more voters and getting out into the field. But, you know, at the core of why we started this, as you mentioned, is because there was a lack in infrastructure to really support young people who want to be involved, who want to be civically engaged, and who want to work for what they believe in, and they want to work for progress. And that's what we're trying to do with Blue Future.
So talk about that specifically. You guys have been going for a year. Where is most, I'm assuming, obviously in contrast to these other, you know, the right-wing groups, which can just go to these big donors, and it, you know, it's just like investing in your own future, basically, if you're, you know, if you're a donor who's concerned about removing environmental regulations and getting more tax giveaways, and then you can kind of fund these kids to go, you know, basically do your work, which will end up making you more money in the long run. Where are you getting your money from? And then talk about how you chose and how to deploy your people and what races specifically you guys are focusing on organizing around.
Yeah. So, you know, we started with a grant, and we were very grateful and fortunate to receive a grant from the Vocal Foundation earlier this year at the beginning of 2018. And that grant enabled us to really start working full time to develop the program, to develop our impact plan, to develop connections and networks with students across about 17 different states, and design our program, taking sort of a user design, a design thinking approach to figure out what it is that students need. And we're entirely youth-led. I graduated in 2017. Half of our co-founders are still in school, and the rest just graduated last year. And so we had a lot of experience coming into it, knowing how we could best support students. And we wanted to, you know, make sure that everything we're doing was in the service of what students actually needed. And so we got started, we had the plan, and then we started raising money, a lot of small dollar events. We've had three different fundraisers, sort of happy hours, mostly with young people contributing 10, 15, 20 bucks. And we've received the support of a couple other PACs and organizations who are working to elect many of the same candidates that we're working on. In terms of those candidates and those districts, we've got folks, as I said, in 19 different congressional districts, from California to Florida, Nebraska to New Jersey, and everywhere in between. Happy to go through the list. But we chose these districts based on the network that we established earlier in the year, connecting with college Democrats groups around the country, connecting with student action groups around the country, and even some high school clubs as well, which we're really excited about. And at the same time, we took a look at the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. The acronym there is CIRCLE. And they do research on youth engagement, youth civic engagement. And they put out a list, I think back in April of 2018, of 50 districts around the country where if young people vote in higher than expected percentages, and if we really make our voices heard, young people will make all the difference in helping to elect one candidate over the other. And so all the districts that we're in are these sort of circle target districts where young people can really make a difference. And so we're excited to be supporting folks in those districts and getting the word out that these are places where if we all band together, if the young people unite, the young people will win.
I know this is a hard question because you don't want to, you know, pick amongst all your kids, right? So
yeah,
all these are great candidates and great races, but can you give a couple of examples of a couple of specific races you guys are targeting, who the candidates are, what you guys are specifically doing for them, and what the sort of dynamics of the races are like?
Yeah, and it is a tough question. And to all our students, if you're listening, we love all of you, and you guys are doing tremendous work.
Absolutely. I apologize for asking the question. I just want to give some texture to it for people, just to kind of fill it out a little bit. But it could be any of the 19 races.
Yeah, I could go on for days about the incredible work. A couple places that come to mind. In California's 49th district in San Diego. We've got two student organizers at UC San Diego who have just been really, really organizing on an incredible level. They're connected so closely with Mike Levin, the Democratic candidate's campaign, and, you know, always hosting phone banks during the week and then going out on the doors on the weekend. And sort of our role is both supporting those lead organizers who we stipend, so that they can focus on organizing and don't have to take, you know, a part-time job working at the cafe or the library on campus. And that really goes a long way for young people. We also support with, funding their Uber rides out to the districts, or train tickets out into, a different part of the field. So 49 is looking really good, and we're really excited about that. Another district that comes to mind, just last weekend, I was up in upstate New York for Antonio Delgado in New York's 19th district, Ulster County. Mm-hmm. And what our students did there was very innovative, very unique. They, you know, understood fundamentally that politics has to fuse with culture. And so what they did with some of our funding was put together a youth voter core to register voters, to get people excited. And what they did just this past weekend was host a community-wide benefit concert with a lot of local artists, all of the candidates running up and down the ticket from state assembly to the Congress. And there were over 1,500 people from the community there. They used our funding to help galvanize that event, and they ended up raising over $50,000 for the local Planned Parenthood and local immigration group. And it was such a joy to be with them. And to be, to witness what that community is doing around such an inspiring candidate in Antonio Delgado. And maybe just the last one that I point to is down in Florida in the 26th district, Debbie Mukasel Powell, as well as the 27th district with Sha-La-La. We've got high school students down there who are just so engaged, so active, in a way that I don't think that narrative really gets out there, that high school students are taking ownership. Certainly after Parkland, after that tragedy, we see a lot of high school students stepping up. And our students down in Florida have been doing that. And same thing, we're funding, these kids can't even drive. So we're funding their Uber rides to the field, and then they're knocking on doors for the whole day and making an impact. And when you send a young people to the door and you know, they're pitching you on this candidate and they're saying, this is about our future, this is about my future, this is about your children and your grandchildren's future. It's a really powerful narrative, and we're really just so lucky to be connected with these incredibly talented organizers all around the country. And as I said, I could go on about Nebraska, about Illinois, about Iowa, Michigan, up and down California, more high school students in New Jersey, and all the rest.
It's awesome. And next, as Juno spreads out to more places, you can pay for Juno rides instead of Uber rides. That in there.
Or some of the scooters, maybe we'll get a partnership with Bird and people can canvas quicker.
That's actually a really good idea.
A Bird.
That's smart. Yeah, that's really, really smart. Yeah, you should write that one down. See? It's a productive interview, man. Okay. Moving forward, a two-part question. I do want to get to, plans for 2020 in a second, but the other thing that I think people really learned, particularly, if for some people who go back to, had maybe a similar experience and a more inspiring one in some way or at the time, because, a lot of young people obviously helped Barack Obama become the first African-American president in 2008, and obviously he was this, incredibly appealing candidate and talented candidate in a lot of ways. And so many people still have so much, appreciation for him in so many ways. And, if you're like me, you like Barack Obama and you just have fundamental disagreements on whether it's, policies towards Wall Street, the banks, inequality, global, you know, drone warfare, projections of foreign policy. I could go down the list. And it's, I think one of the things that people learned was you need to have some type of constant and antagonistic but also supportive relationship with those in power, whether you're, you know, young Democrats, and then certainly I think groups like DSA's growth is incredibly helpful for this. That's another group that I think would be great if you guys, you know, were talking to as part of this really broad out center left through socialist coalition that we need. And, you know, so that you could really play a smart game where you're getting Democrats into office, which absolutely needs to happen, but then also having a strategy for accountability so that student debt relief happens, so that serious climate change plans happen, and so on and so forth. So do you guys kind of have like a thought process for, say, even just the next year? I mean, and obviously, you know, 2020 starts, and this is one of the problems, is everything just gets compressed into these electoral timeframes. Right. And maybe this is even more relevant after 2020 if we do what we need to do and elect a Democratic president. But how you guys can continue this in a way that means like almost just like sort of the youth side of a left movement holding power accountable so that real things happen for people.
Yeah, it's a great question and thanks for raising it. And, you know, we should say that you know, the Democratic Party is not perfect, but elections have consequences. And I think we saw that especially in 2016. And we felt that most recently with Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. Yep. And so our students, you know, are totally fired up around these Democratic candidates. Whether they're perfect or not is a different question. And we're, you know, really excited to be able to be in a position in 2019 to hold them accountable. But we, you know, we support our candidates, and we believe in them because we know that they'll stand up for our values most of the time, if not all of the time. And in terms of our sort of plan for accountability, certainly connecting with other youth-led advocacy groups, you know, we're new, we're still learning, and our focus has been mostly on the election. So we want to connect with other youth-led advocacy groups like DSA, like the Alliance for Youth Organizing and Youth Action, just to name a few. And figure out what, you know, how, what we can advocate on and go back to our candidates and say, hey, remember, we helped get you elected. We dedicated, you know, over 2,000 volunteer hours to your campaign. What can we do about student debt? What can we do about democracy issues and voting rights and expanding the franchise for all people and especially young people? How can we get same-day registration? So that students who often have a million things going on and realize, oh, I can't vote if I'm not registered. Well, why don't you go down to the poll and register the same day? So we came out with sort of policy proposals around mostly democracy and civil rights issues, although certainly expect to be advocating around a host of different issues as they come up, climate change, gun violence, healthcare, and the rest. But in terms of 2019, we want to put that into play. And this year, we're funding a lot of electoral work. Next year, we see the model being the same, and we want to fund students to organize around the issues and have lobbying meetings with their with the candidates that they helped elect. Bring them out to D.C. for a youth-led day of action on Capitol Hill or something of the sort. And so we really see it as a continuation, continuing to build political power for young people. Continuing to trust young people to be civic leaders in their communities, to be demanding a better system, and, you know, expanding the base of young people who we can then circle back to in 2020 and say, okay, well, now it's really all on the line. This is our chance to put our country back on the right path, and here's how we're going to do it.
How can people connect with you? You know, obviously, particularly students and other young people, there are a lot that watch and listen to this show. How can they get involved now and moving forward with Our Blue Future?
Yeah, that's a great question, and thanks for raising it. So, folks, we encourage everybody to follow us on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. Look up Blue Future on all of those platforms, and we should pop right up. Folks could also email us at hello@ourbluefuture.us. We're very responsive and would love to connect with young people, old people, every people, to discuss how we might be able to partner, collaborate, and expand our political power as young people and as progressives. So that's hello at ourbluefuture.us.
Nick Guthman is the co-founder and executive director of Our Blue Future. Check it out. They're doing really important works in key races. I was actually just talking with a good friend of mine last night about Anthony Delgado's race upstate. And it's really important work. Thanks for what you're doing. Appreciate your time, Nick.
Thank you, Michael. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Shout out Anthony Delgado, a fellow Colgate grad. Yeah. Also, negative shout out to Claudia Tenney, also Colgate grad, who called the school a crazy left-wing school, which is also not true.
That's not what I'd call it.
Who's Claudia Tenney?
She's the Trump GOP congresswoman in Central New York.
Oh, she's who she's Delgado is running against.
No, he's running in like Upper Hudson Valley.
He's in
Ulster.
Kingston, right?
Yeah.
Ulster, okay.
And Anthony Brindisi is Brindisi is running against
him. Hey, Anthony Brindisi over here. What's this guy, a rapper?
Is Colgate to do with the toothpaste?
Well, so Colgate toothpaste came after Palmolive, the soap, the dish soap.
But was it the Colgate family?
Yeah, like that Sam helped? B. Colgate or something like that. And it was a Baptist school.
And anyway, he was like, we will create with this toothpaste fortune an extreme leftist center of indoctrination where young men and women can explore gender fluidity.
Exactly.
Hate white patriarchy.
And learn how to be victims.
Learn how to be professional victims. Study why there is no absolute truth, and really the only truths are that white men are evil.
It was so weird that they wrote that goal. Almost 200 years ago.
Yeah, right. As Bell Hooks has so rightly noted. That would be really funny. College, stuffy oligarch college foundings that are all like Charlie Kirk propaganda.
Like a fortune based on like a salve.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, we need to fund a gender studies department.
Yes. I like how it's becoming a Mandela impression too.
Yeah, I can't help it.
I founded Palmolive because I wanted a sensible soap for the American consumer.
I
founded Colgate because toxic masculinity is running amok.
I can't satirize like college culture from a right wing perspective without going into right wing Mandela.
That's fair. And the point is not like that we shouldn't be nice to each other and shit.
Yeah,
and
it's
like, be good people. But then it's like the SJWs, they're not good people. They're fucking yelling, man. Did you see this video of Conor McGregor?
I actually never looked up the motto of my school, but it turns out that Alba Homines Destrutern means white men are canceled.
And I have receipts. Actually, Bates was coeducational and abolitionist from the beginning, so there was obviously an extreme communist agenda there. Yeah. I have a problem with Bates. Slavery would have ended naturally.
I feel like the Northeast has some better schools. When you go, I feel like Virginia and...
Ooh, yeah, Virginia's, that's tough stuff.
This the Colgate minute now, but Richard Spencer started out at Colgate and then was like, this place isn't racist enough for me. Went to UVA.
He literally transferred from Colgate to UVA?
Yeah.
Yeah. But on the other hand, Harvard's wealth was also built on slavery. So, at any rate, I'm liking Mandela Rogan.
Hashtag tax the endowment.
Yeah, exactly. Hashtag tax the endowment, indeed. I'm liking, I like Mandela Rogan. I think that works. On the Michael Brooks Show on Tuesday, please listen. I mean, obviously, I want you to listen, watch, and subscribe in general, but what's happening in Brazil, it runs directly parallel to what's happening here. It couldn't be more important. It has massive regional implications, and there's no doubt that when U.S. corporate interests and intelligence services turn their attention back to Latin America, it was to reverse the pink tide, and it was to target even a president like Lula, who was very social democratic and moderate, but wouldn't give over Brazil's oil resources, as an example, to Chevron and Exxon. And fascism is being, literal fascism is being facilitated there. And also, I will continue to cover Lula. He is absolutely a political prisoner, and this has really big ramifications. And Brian Mayer and I did the sort of, I would say that was probably the most, I mean, we've covered a lot, but I think we sort of, we covered most bases of it, from the how of the delegitimization of the Workers' Party to the role that, whether it's the Atlas Network or other groups that have actually been operative in Latin America for a long time on behalf of U.S. business interests undermining democracy, are playing out in Brazil right now.
I mean, the Lula thing is sort of what the show exists to cover in a certain way, right? Like, the reason we do wider context on that show is for moments like this.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, TMBS is, you know, contextual deep dive, and things run in concert globally. This Sunday, Illicit History with Julian...
Julian Brave Noisecat.
Julian Brave Noisecat on indigenous conceptions of property and global indigenous rights struggles, and actually the really interesting policy implications from New Zealand to India that could have huge effects on both the environment and ecological justice. Patreon.com/TMBS. Would you mind, Matt, real quick, just throwing up our YouTube page? Because if you haven't subscribed yet, the Michael Brooks Show YouTube page has a hell of a lot of clips up there, and we haven't been promoting it that much, but we have been steadily kind of building it up. And once it becomes, hopefully will be monetized soon, that's when we're going to live stream the Michael Brooks Show over there. And we're going to also do some distinct live events that will be fun and totally separate, like maybe some video games, maybe some movie viewings, some shows with other YouTubers and podcasters and so on. But if you look, like,
about 100 away from 10,000,
and
so
about
100 there.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get there. That's a big number, obviously. So I think actually literally when you hit 10,000, it does something to algorithms.
YouTube's
so.
Algorithms are, they graduate based on followers and time watched. So
right. And so, yeah, you could see, like, there's a lot of deep dives here. There's a lot of global stuff. But also there's a lot of, we're sort of like doing the definitive anti-intellectual dark web channel. There's more pop culture. There's more sports. It's, you know, it's very obviously it's in the Majority Report universe, but it's we're doing something different there, and it's a great way to get the flavor of the show. And there's a lot of clips with, you know, Matt Taibbi and Anoa Changa and other great guests, and a lot of Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin dunking. So I'll take a little bit extra time today to say what are you trying to show? Oh, yeah, yeah, good stuff. So, yeah, please go to Michael Brooks Show YouTube, hit that subscribe button, and share away. And, yeah, get Literary Hangover up there, too. That's another great YouTube channel. And, Matt, take us through Literary Hangover.
Well, the new episode isn't quite on YouTube yet. It takes a bit of time for me to make the videos for those. But the new episode is actually one that I did on my own. It's about an hour on the Pequot War, or I think it's betterly known as the Mystic Massacre. It's basically the, to summarize, the first genocide in New England. Yeah, check it out. I'm really happy with how it came together. I was pretty nervous stitching. I stitched together a couple documentaries, a couple academic articles, and a couple audiobooks. So wide range of media to help that I use to understand the incident. And yeah, I hope people, and let me know how you reacted to it too. I'd be curious. But yeah, Patreon.com/literary hangover.
And I would really recommend, especially if you haven't checked it out yet, I would listen to the Corey Robin pod, because that's a good transition, I think, if you're a politics head, to kind of getting into the Literary Hangover frame of mind. And also at some point there's going to be, we're going to do some type of Literary Hangover /TMBS YouTube crossovers. So those will be like fun. Not too long, but, you know, fun standalone events like watching Matt and I do drugs together, as an example. Of course, also check out The Antifada.
Yeah, it looks like there's a new episode up 6 hours ago. The Battle of the Andes, Shyam, Kana, and Andy Battle. So episode 26, Yeah, check that out. Jamie will talk about it tomorrow.
And become a member of the Majority Report today. That's how this show happens. Majority.fm/become a member /join. What is it? I actually forget the URL. Is it /become a member? I thought it was /become a member.
Isn't it jointhemajorityreport.com?
Well, that's a whole other URL. It's jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com or majority.fm/become a member, I believe it is. There's also a link to it if you're subscribing on iTunes and on YouTube in the show notes. And you can click there directly and for pennies a day get 5 day a week left politics, talk, news, and entertainment show. Also, like it on iTunes, subscribe to it on YouTube, and spread the word. We're going to go to the fun half now.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook. Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.